The first couple of sources are going to be familiar, given what we've been talking about the past few weeks. And I want to begin right away with the source with which I opened this entire series, which is with the opening to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's By His Light. And he says the following: when seeking to shape our personalities according to Torah values, we must relate to at least three levels of expectation and responsibility. These can be regarded as concentric circles, moving from the broader to the more specific. The first is the universal demands placed upon one simply as a human being. And that is what we talked about in the first week. What does it mean to be a human being? What responsibilities does that impose upon us? And we saw how we primarily have two responsibilities given to us, commanded by God to the first human beings, le'ovda u'le'shamra, to both serve the world, to be productive members of society, to contribute to yishuvo shel olam, to contribute to some sense of you know, worth to the world. And also we have to have a sense of shmira. We have to take pride. We have to protect the world. That's what we talked about the first week. The second week was number two, the demands of a Jew. And so we spoke about this a lot last week, and we'll be touching base with this once again. But essentially, a Jew is someone who is commanded by God to observe the mitzvot. And as I spoke about at length last week, what this means is that all of us have to accept that there are 613 mitzvot that we need to observe. And we can't pat ourselves on the back, especially during this period of time, during Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We can't congratulate ourselves for keeping just a handful and get really proud of ourselves for doing that. No, we have to accept, we have to realize that there are indeed a whole range of mitzvot we need to observe. And what I spoke about last week is ultimately, it's about our mentality. If we have the mentality of someone who picks and chooses, we do the things we do, but everything else, not for us. That's a problematic mentality. We need to eradicate that mentality. On the flip side, even if we don't necessarily observe everything we should, but we accept, we recognize, we realize we should, that's very different. That's what we spoke about last week. The third concentric circle of Rav Aharon Lichtenstein is, as we see in source number one, the responsibilities of a Ben Torah, one who makes Torah study a central part of his life and embodies its values. So this is where, at first glance, this entire plan for this series breaks down. Because Rav Lichtenstein, the term of Ben Torah is a very specific one. And we have to remember Rav Lichtenstein's actual audience here. It's B'nai Yeshiva, people who have committed to a year, 2 years, however many years, learning in a yeshiva. And a Ben Torah means someone who is essentially dedicating their life to learning Torah and little else. If you spend time in yeshiva, basically from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep, save a few breaks, you are learning Torah, and Rav Lichtenstein is speaking to those people, and he regards this, Ben Torah is usually a synonymous term with spiritual elite. People who are, you know, not just doing what God expects of them as Jews, but kind of reaching higher. For us, none of us have the opportunity to devote our lives to learning Torah and nothing else. So at first glance, we might think, what is there to say about being B'nai Torah? Unfortunately, we can't live the life of those in yeshiva. But the truth is, you can apply the term Ben Torah to those who also, and we're kind of going to see this soon, but you can apply that term to those who do have other things to do. But honestly, everything Rav Lichtenstein says applies to another term we can use, for want of a better expression, a from Jew. Many people have an aversion to this term because it is usually used, again, self-congratulatory. It is used often to try and distinguish people who are perhaps keeping some visible mitzvot, but are not necessarily that much more religious than anyone else. I want to use it in maybe its truer sense. I'm using from as a term to describe Jews who are striving for a certain level of spiritual elitism. And because that's a mouthful, I'm going to use the word from. So essentially, as I spoke about last week, all of us should be striving to keep all of the mitzvot. However, we recognize that there is another tier of observance. There is something else that we can do that we can look towards, we can aspire to be. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. So if you take a look at source number two, it's a familiar source again. It still begins where we spoke last week, where we spoke in the first week. Vayetzav Adonai Elohim al ha'adam le'mor, God commanded man, saying, Mikol etzagan achol tochal, every tree of the garden you are free to eat. It begins, as always, with Vayetzav, with a command. Last week, we spoke at length about the fact that by being commanded, again, we must do the things we are told to do, regardless of whether or not we want to do them. However, this time around, if we are striving to be more spiritually elite, if we are aspiring to be a certain type of Jew who you know is even better than someone who's observing mitzvot, there is an additional valence. Last week was all about the number of mitzvot observed. Right? There are 613 mitzvot, and you've got to keep all of them. That was basically in one line, that's what I said last week. And we can't kid ourselves into thinking if we just keep a handful, you know, we're doing good. This time around, it's about almost the character of how you observe those mitzvot. So if we take a look at source number three, it is a very, very fascinating source in the Gemara for a whole variety of reasons. But it's from the Gemara in Menachot, and it says the following. Amar Rav Ami, midvarav shel Rav Yossi. So the Gemara had previously quoted a statement of Rav Yossi. We don't need to read that statement in order to understand the rest. Nilmad afilu lo shana adam ela perek echad shacharit uperek echad arvit. Even if the only thing you can do the entire day is learn one chapter of Mishnah in the morning and one chapter of Mishnah in the evening, in other words, the most minimal amount of Torah learning possible, kiyem mitzvah lo yamush et seva haTorah hazeh mipicha, we still nonetheless fulfill the mitzvah of our obligation to learn Torah. And this verse is taken from Sefer Yehoshua, from the book of Joshua, in the eighth, in the first chapter, the eighth verse. Yehoshua meets the head of God's kind of angelic, the chief angel, of God's retinue. And he instructs Yehoshua, v'higita bo yomam v'alayla, meditate on it day and night. Don't let the Torah depart from your mouth. Okay, so that teaches us the obligation to learn Torah. Says Rav Ami, what that means is just learn a minimal level of Torah in the morning and the evening, boom. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, afilu lo kara adam ela kriyat shma shacharit v'arvit. You don't even need to do that. If you simply say the shma during davening in the morning and the evening, you fulfill your obligation of shma. Kiyem lo yamush lo yamush. You still fulfill your obligation, because when you think about it, shma is not only an obligation to recite shma, but it is also verses from the Torah. So when you are reading the shma, you are also reading verses of Torah. Boom, you just learned Torah. Well done, you. However, then the Gemara says, V'davar zeh, we're now onto the second to last line, Asoli omro bifnei am ha'amei ha'aretz. But you should not publicize this to the amei ha'aretz is translated here, Steinsaltz translated as ignoramuses. And am ha'aretz usually implies that. It's worth knowing am ha'aretz literally means people of the land. And essentially it means those people. And if you think about when we learned about the Mishnah and Chazal and the history of Chazal, the people who essentially didn't subscribe to their view, they didn't necessarily follow them to any particular degree of care. Those, you know, the random public folk, they were not necessarily so particular about mitzvot. And so first, Rabbi Yochanan says you should not publicize this to the Amei Haaretz. The Rava Amar mitzvah le'omro b'fnei Amei Haaretz, whereas Rava says, no, you should publicize this to the Amei Haaretz. And ultimately the question is, you know, when it comes to the general population, Rava thinks we should encourage the people to basically at least try and fulfill as many obligations as possible, as minimally as possible. And Rabbi Yochanan worries that if we publicize to the masses, if you simply say the Shema, you are good, then people will think, oh, I said the Shema tonight, I don't need to do any more. Incidentally, this is a complete aside, but my Rebbe, Rabbi Jeremy Weider, used to like to remind us in YU has a very grueling schedule. You have Torah learning 9 till 3, essentially, and then you have your college classes 3 till 8. In between those times is time for you to breaks for you to eat. But basically, what do you do after 8 p.m. at night? So most people do their college classes and date and all those other things you're trying to do. But there is a culture in NYU to still learn in the evenings. So Rabbi Weider liked to remind us that technically our recitation of the Shema does check that box of saying the Shema, but we should strive to do more. But ultimately, what this Gemara seems to imply is very much the mentality of last week. A Jew's life is a series of checklists. All of the mitzvot present us with a variety of things we must do and not do. And simply what you're looking to do is check off as many of those as possible. And so when it comes to our obligation to learn Torah, boom, just check it off the list and you say Shema and you fulfilled your obligation. Great. It's Pesach time and you need to eat matzah. So there is a shear, there is a kazayit, an olive's bulk. So if you have, we're not going to get into now what that actually looks like, but you have that size, that minimal amount of size, and boom, you fulfilled your mitzvah. That's the mentality of what we're going to call, you know, last week's Jew. We have all of these mitzvot we need to observe, and we are essentially going to treat our, you know, Jewish life like a giant to-do list. And I want to stress, we should think like that. Because the problem I spoke about last week was that we don't think of it like a to-do list. We think of it like a menu from which we can pick a variety of mitzvot and ignore the things we don't like. But the truth is we need to have the checklist mentality when it comes to our Jewish lives. We need to recognize. We need to realize that there are things we just have to do and we want to get them done. However, this week, we are thinking more aspirationally. And so the question becomes, can we think about our Jewish lives in a way that's slightly more ambitious than simply a list of things we have to do? And given what we just read in source number 3, that the Shema will let you check the box of Torah learning, one of the most important Mishnayot seems to suggest something different. Some of you, it was either Pesach or Shavuot, I forget. I remember I was in a tent when I said it. But I spoke about a related theme during one of my drashot. But the Mishnah in Peah says the following, the very first Mishnah. Elu dvarim she'in lohem shio. These things have no fixed amount. And what this essentially means is, on the one hand, it is really, really easy to check it off the list. But on the other hand, no matter how much you do, you can never really say, you've finished it, you've completed your work. Ha-peah. Payer is the obligation to leave the corner of your fields gathered so that the poor can take from it. Habikurim, first fruits. We will read about those at the beginning of our parasha this coming Shabbat. Re'ayon, the obligation to appear before God on the pilgrimage festivals. Gmilut, chasadim, kind deeds. V'talmud Torah and Torah learning. Elu dvarim she'adam ochel perotein b'olam hazeh v'karen kem l'olam haba. And these are the deeds that it continues. And these are the things that you're going to get reward in this world, but you will also get, you know, a far greater reward. It's almost like a spiritual investment. You do them in this world, God will want to reward you, but the true reward will come in the world to come. Kibud av ve'em, honoring your parents. Gmilut chasadim, kind deeds. V'havad shalom bein adam l'chaveru, bringing peace between two people. V'talmud Torah keneged kulam, and the study of Torah is equal to them all. This Mishnah paints a very different picture of Shema, of Torah learning. Source 3 told us, you want to learn Torah, just say Shema. Great job. You say Shema after 8:45 tonight, and you fulfilled your obligation to learn Torah this evening. However, source 4 is telling us that there is no end. No matter how much Torah learning you do, it will never be enough. And the same is true of chesed. That's the other, you know, most of these other things being described essentially fall into the chesed, the kind deeds bucket. The same is true of chesed, that there's no amount that you can really ever do that will be enough. And there is perhaps a third broad category of things that, while not mentioned in this Mishnah, nonetheless seem to also be treated as things that should consume us the entire time. And we actually read it as part of the Shema. Source number 5. V'haya im shamoa tishmuel mitzvotai, if you obey the commandments, asher anochi mitzaveh etchem hayom, that I command you today, li ahava et adnai lechem ul avda, to love God and to serve him, b'chol levavchem uv'chol nafshechem, with all your heart and soul, or with all your mind and body, with everything. Avoda, serving God. What exactly that means, whether it means, as we're about to see it in a Mishnah, it can mean the temple service, it can mean davening. We're going to understand it more broadly as serving God, should consume us. There are three mitzvot, Torah learning, chesed, and the service of God, which should kind of consume our entire lives. And these three are particularly important because, as we see in source number 6, it's the second Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, one of the best known, probably because Pirkei Avot is the most learned tractate of Mishnayot, and everyone gets up to number 2. Like, no one knows, like, you know, chapter 4, Mishnah 3 off the top of their heads, because, like, no one ever gets that far. But, like, the first two chapters, pretty familiar. Shimon HaTzadik Hayam Yishyarim Knesset HaGdola. It introduces us to Shimon HaTzadik, who I am, Omer, and his phrase, what he was best known for declaring, Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Omed, the world stands on three things. There are three pillars that are the foundation of this world. Al HaTorah, the Al HaAvodah, the Al Gemilut Chasadim. That it is Torah learning, Avodah, serving God, and kind deeds. In other words, these three pillars are foundational to our very existence. They are more than simply things to check off a list. They are, you know, woven into the very fabric of the world. They need to consume us. And it's, in a nutshell, if there was one phrase to kind of distinguish between the Jew we spoke of last week, the Jew who is Shomer Mitzvot, the Jew who observes all the commandments, versus the from Jew, the Jew who is striving to be spiritually elite, it would be the difference between someone who is not completely consumed by an attempt to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not completely consumed by, you know, connecting to God, versus someone who is. And no one describes this better than Rambam in his Hilchot Deot. This is actually an incredibly long two halachot, but just by reading the kind of the bits that I've got here, you'll get the gist of what he's saying. Rambam says the following in source number 7. Sarich ha'adam she'chavin libo v'chol ma'asav kula. You need to direct every single one of your deeds leida et Hashem Baruch Hu bilvad, in order to attain the knowledge of God. You need to be consumed by God. V'yichye shivto v'kumo v'dibora hakol l'umad zeh hadavah. Everything. Sitting, standing, speaking, everything needs to be done in the service of God. In other words, sure, you made your brachot earlier today. That's obviously in the service of God. But Rambam is now saying there's a higher level still. Someone who actually has their neutral activities are also done in the service of God. And as he explains after the ellipses, this is one of his examples, va'afilu b'sha'ashahu yashay. Someone goes to sleep. Im yashin ledat kadesha tanuach da'ato alav. That it's going to rest. You're sleeping so that your mind will be rested. V'yanoach gufa, and you'll be physically rested. Kadesha lo yechelev lo yuchal al avodat Hashem v'hu chole. Because you can't, when you're sick, you can't serve God to the best of your abilities. Nimtzeit sheino shelo avodah l'makom baruch hu. That is sleeping. Your sleep itself becomes in the service of God. You may remember in the first week, I gave the example, I will say at this point, Lahavdil, not to compare this person to what Rambam is describing, but I mentioned how Manchester United star player Bruno Fernandes takes a nap every afternoon in order to rest to be a better soccer player. That's essentially what Rambam's describing here. If you take a nap in the afternoon because you're lazy, bad. You take a nap in the afternoon so that you'll have more energy to do more, you know, later in the day. Good. If you go to sleep at night with the intent to, oh, I am going to go to sleep tonight to give myself enough hours so that tomorrow morning when my alarm goes off at 6 a.m. so that I can get to shul on time, boom, That is sleep, that your sleep itself becomes the service of God. Rambam continues, Va'al inyan zeh tzivu chachamim ve'amru, and this is what Chazal meant, our sages meant when they said, V'chol ma'asecha yihiyu l'shem shamayim, all of your deeds should be for the sake of heaven, V'hu she'amah Shlomo b'chochmato, and this is also what King Solomon said in Proverbs, B'chol derachecha do'ehu, in all your ways know him, V'hu yiyasher or chotecha, and he will make your paths straight. In other words, what a Jew striving for a spiritual elitism, the way they conduct themselves is that everything they do is geared towards the service of God. It's living your life with a certain amount of intent. Everything you do is done primarily so that you are best positioned to be a server of God. If you're relaxing because you've had the classic situation when people first go off to spend time in yeshiva is the most intense people burn out quickly because they can't internalize the idea that taking a break is also the service of God. They can't internalize sometimes you need to rest in order to re-energize. What Rambam is saying here is, but if you're doing all of these things in order to serve God better, that is a level of spiritual elitism. And I want to stress, I'm not endorsing like complete asceticism here. There are some people who will tell you, oh, food is just fuel. And therefore, who cares what you eat? Just kind of maximize your fuel intake so that you are best positioned to learn. No, we should still enjoy, you know, what God has given us in this world. But nonetheless, and not just for serving God, but generally speaking, we should be, as someone who does not eat a great number of vegetables because they do not appeal to me, even still when I'm well past childhood age. Nonetheless, you've got to be careful about, you know, what you eat in general, because it turns out if you fuel yourself purely off sugar, you'll crash and be exhausted. You know, you can still enjoy yourself. But the point is, if you have a mentality that everything you want to do is done in the service of God, then that is a spiritual elitism. And this is why, one of my bugbears is people who misunderstand that the constant demand of mitzvah observance is not in and of itself the service of God. You know, take, you know, a particular example, you know, you come to shul at 6:30 in the morning for shacharit. We get through things pretty quickly. Chances are, if you're anything like me, you're half exhausted at that point. You don't really know. You're not completely, you know, in the davening zone. That can feel like that's not serving God. But no, if you woke up at 6 in the morning and you forced yourself out of bed and you forced yourself dressed and you forced yourself to shul, everything you just did in that moment is the service of God, regardless of how spiritual, regardless of how inspired you felt in that moment to wake up every morning in order to serve God. That is not just the I davened this morning checkbox. That is a much greater achievement to do that, which is why, you know, sometimes we think, oh, we can only daven when we're in the mood, when we feel connected. No, it's the opposite. It is by doing it when we feel miserable, by doing these things when we don't want to, that's how we truly show our lives are dedicated to the service of God. And there is a really, really powerful idea that captures this in the Gemara in Brachot. So the Gemara in Brachot, we'll read source number 8 in a second, gives us a couple of, the Mishnah mentions the tefillot of a rabbi called Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. And he had certain tefillot, certain prayers he would say when entering and leaving the Beit Midrash. So source number 8, what he said when leaving the Beit Midrash is as follows. Bitziato mahu omer. Upon his exit, what did he say? Moda ani lefanecha Hashem Elokai. And this is to this day the prayer when ending Torah learning for the evening, when leaving the Beit Midrash. I give thanks before you, my God, that you placed my lot among those who sit in the study hall, And you've not given me my portion among those who sit idly on the street corners. Sha'ani mashgim behe mashgimim. They wake up early and I wake up early. That was the other way around. Ani mashgim ledivrei Torah, but I wake up in order to learn Torah. Vehe mashgimim ledivarim betelim, but they wake up to waste their time. Ani amel veheim amelim. I toil. I have a difficult, work day. Veheim amelim, and they also toil. Ani amel umakabel scha. I work and receive reward. Veheim amelim vein amakabel scha, and they work and do not receive reward. Ani rats veheim ratsim. We're both running. Ani rats lechayeho alam haba. I am running to the life of the world to come. Veheim ratsim liv er shachat, and they run to the pit of despair, of destruction. This is also said always at Asiyam. It's really important to clarify here. This is not contrasting someone who learns Torah with someone who works. A yoshev kranot is not someone who is doing a job. It's someone who's literally, wasting their time. It's someone who nonetheless, I have never actually done this. Even I have lines drawn, but it's people, quite frankly, if you're waking up very early in the morning in order to watch a sports game when you wouldn't usually wake up that early, that is probably a good definition of, being a yoshev kranot. That kind of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana is describing here, someone who essentially has tailored their entire life to the wasting of time. In this context, there's also a really important Gemara. Source number 9. Margila b'pumayhu d'rabanan d'yavna. There was a statement, a well-known saying of the sages of Yavna. And interestingly, Rav Lichtenstein mentions... this, he thinks, should be stuck in the walls of every single Beit Midrash and perhaps every single shul also. Ani bria v'chaveri bria. I am God's creature and my fellow is God's creature. Ani malachti bo'ir v'hu malachto basadeh. My work is in the city and his work is in the field. Ani mashkim limlachti. I wake up early for my work. V'hu mashkim limlachto, and he rises early for his work. Kashem shehu eino mitgader bimelachti, kach ani eini mitgader bimelachto. And like, he doesn't try and do my job, I don't try and do his. V'shem atomar, and this is why we have the saying, ani marbevahu mamit. Sorry, unless you're going to say, oh, I learned so much Torah and he doesn't. Shaninu, this is why we have the saying, echad hamarbeva echad hamamit. Whether one brings a large sacrifice or a small sacrifice, uvilvachi kovin libo l'shamayim, as long as their intent to serve heaven is there, it doesn't matter what you do. In other words, this statement, it just is very important lest anyone walk away from source number 8 thinking that those who, again, are doing whatever job they are doing, that is not in some way valued. Indeed, Rabbi Yehuda Amital, who was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion, for many years, he made the students of his yeshiva daven shacharit the same time the kibbutz down the road woke up for their shacharit, because his point was, why should we, treat ourselves any different? Why should we be any lazier than they? But the key idea here is, whether or not one's professional job, which is none of us have the professional job of learning Torah, nonetheless, there is a certain level of being consumed by Torah, by being consumed by serving God. What Rambam describes, what Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana describes, what the sages of Yavna all describe, is a certain level of your entire life being built around the service of God. And to this end, Rav Lichtenstein says, source number 10, the Gemara, and he cites what was our source 8, speaks of Yoshvei Beit HaMidrash and of Yoshvei Kranot, those who dwelt in the Beit Midrash, and those who dwelt at street corners. What is a Yoshev Kranot? Someone who hangs around the candy store, the pub, or whatever the current equivalent may be. He is defined by merely hanging around, by being a loafer. It is possible for a person to be seated in the Beit HaMidrash as a Yoshev Keren, and it is possible for a person working in a store to be the equivalent, in a sense, of a Yoshev Beit HaMidrash. In other words, our spiritual elitism that we can strive for is not specific to people who are going to devote their entire day to the service of God. Spiritual elitism is making sure that there are as many aspects as of your day as possible to the service of God. You can go to sleep at night with a whole range of mentalities. But if you go to sleep at night in part in order to feel refreshed, if you go to sleep at night in order to feel energized for the next day, in order to wake up to daven, that is serving God. If you are, you know, if you're eating food and you're, you know, you're careful, okay, making brachot is an example of something that we're just expected to do. But if you are, I'm not a big 100 brachot person. I'm not one of those people who tries to get in as many brachot in the day. But if you are that kind of person, if you're going to try and have, you know, you're going to intentionally have an extra snack in the day in order to make another bracha to infuse a little bit more holiness into your day, that's another example. There are a whole variety of different ways to infuse our day with this godliness and to try and ensure that even the most simple of actions that we do, we are doing in order to some way serve God. Yes, it is very important to daven mincha, and one should daven mincha, but there are additional ways one can serve God in the afternoon and evening that they're perhaps already doing. Doing a whole variety of different things, the way we eat, the way we conduct ourselves, the way we act, all of these various things can be done in the service of God. And related to this, there is a really important point. I like mentioning this at times, and then I finally decided to get the quote. It's from it's a lengthy quote, but it's worth reading for everyone to read through it. It happens to be an article by my Rebbe, Rabbi Jeremy Weider. He's talking about something else, but in passing, he mentions the following. But sometimes lack of appreciation of realia stems from being unaware of how different their world, the world of the Talmud, was from ours. Take, for example, the practice of Vatikin, those who begin Shacharit at sunrise, of which the Talmud speaks glowingly. Most contemporary students of Talmud assume that the greatness of those who pray with the sunrise is the fact that they awaken so early in the day. This is, I would argue, waking up, you know, for Vatikin, the way we commonly understand it, fits with the mode of what we spoke about last week. You have an obligation, a checklist to daven Shacharit, and so you are going to try and daven it as early as possible, the earliest possible time, the most optimal time of the day, because that willingness to check off that mitzvah straight away is itself an indication of your religiosity. However, as Rabbi Weider points out, such an interpretation is almost certainly incorrect. That's not what's special about Vatikin. In the pre-industrial world, as he goes on to say, I'm reading still from source 11 again, people generally went to bed shortly after dark and usually woke up well before sunrise. Most people were already at work in the fields by the time the sun rose. In light of this point, we understand the Mishnah in Brachot that speak of workers reading the Shema and praying while up a scaffold or in a tree. If anything, the greatness of those who prayed with the sunrise was that they delayed going to work until they could say the Shema and pray at an ideal time. Alternatively, one might consider the greatness of Vatikin as having the good fortune to be able to time one Shema to come out at sunrise. Recall that they had no means of telling the time the way we do today, as there were no watches or clocks. But there's this first explanation, and I want to you know, twist it slightly. What made Vatikin special was not the fact that people woke up early to daven, but that people took the time out of their day to remember to daven. Or in the Mishnah in Brachot, in the parentheses, people paused their days. People were already doing the work, and yet they paused what they were doing in order to serve God. They made sure that connecting with God, that serving him, was just something that consumed them. And that consumption can happen in one of two ways. Either a general attentiveness to mitzvot, that perhaps we otherwise wouldn't have, but more specifically, it's about using all the other opportunities. And at this point, I'm going to stop the screen share. It's about using all the other opportunities in our day in order to serve God. So it's really important to recognize that a from Jew is not someone who keeps Shabbat and Kashrut. And this is not to denigrate people who keep Shabbat and Kashrut. Far from it. We should celebrate that people do keep these things. But during Elul, during the Yamim Noram, we don't get any praise for keeping, you know, a minimal number of mitzvot. A Frum Jew is not someone who dresses to a particular convention. It's definitely not someone who judges other people for not being frummer than, you know, who judges people for not being as frum as them. Essentially, a Frum Jew, a spiritually elite Jew, is someone who places God front and center of their life. They don't see Shabbat simply as a list of do's and do nots. And this is something that I was actually just listening to something today, and I think I've mentioned before. There is currently a tremendous fad in the wider world to quote unquote observe Shabbat. And there is actually someone I admire a lot. His name is Cal Newport. I think I mentioned him last week because I'm obsessed with him. And I was just listening to his most recent podcast, and he mentions that he quote unquote keeps Shabbat. What he went on to basically say, he describes, is that he basically doesn't do work for, you know, from Friday sundown until Motzei Shabbat. He actually observes that he doesn't work, and he doesn't, I think, probably consume himself. He doesn't like to be consumed by a cell phone at the best of times, but basically he has a chill session. That's basically what he does. He doesn't want to be bothered. He's not hard to contact. And fine, there is this fad right now of observing Shabbat. But that's not really what Shabbat is. That is, getting a break from our phones is a side benefit. You know, there's nothing more beautiful after a 2 or even a 3 day Yom Tov of being like, I've not had to look at my phone this entire time. I am willfully ignorant of the news because it's never good. It's never fun to check. So I got a 3 day break. But it's more than that. But we have to realize, I would say, a frum Jew, someone striving for a certain level of spiritual elitism, also recognizes that Shabbat is more than a list of do's and don'ts. It's about using it as a day to reflect on our relationship with God. I try to, every Shabbat, take some time to kind of like, you know, assess and think about, you know, these kinds of things. It's usually the trademark is I start pacing at that point. So Ruthie, usually when she sees me pacing, she knows a few minutes afterwards, I'm going to like share some epiphany that I've just had or some like self-reflection. But it's important to use Shabbat also as a time to try and think about how we can strengthen our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our brachot are not simply a matir, a way of permitting us to eat our food. They are not simply, though simply is probably the wrong word here, it's not just thanking God for giving us food. It's also about infusing our day with holiness, injecting a little extra spirituality into what is otherwise an animalistic activity. That's what spiritual elitism is. That's what, you know, the true aspirations we need to have are. Yes, we need to think about all of the other mitzvot we need to observe, but it's more than that. It's about how can we try and infuse in our day greater levels of spirituality. There are obvious things. Again, if instead of watching, relax. We spoke about this in the first week. You want to watch TV to relax, great. But rather than watching it for 2 hours, as I kind of spoke about in the first week, read a book for half of that. So now instead, read a sefer. You know, learn some additional Torah to kind of bring, again, God front and center into your life. But ultimately, when we began this, you know, series, the title was What is a Good Jew? So the first thing was really, what is a good human being? Someone who contributes to the world around them. And all of us need to do that. The second, what is a good Jew? A good Jew is someone who accepts that they are bound by all of the mitzvot, not just the ones they want to do. And they at least endeavor to observe as many as possible. And they at least recognize that the ones they don't observe, it's wrong that they're not observing them. They don't pick and choose. And finally, what is someone who is striving for a level of spiritual elitism? Someone who goes above and beyond simply seeing mitzvot as a checklist, simply thinking that by saying the Shema, I have learned all the Torah I need to do for the day and for the evening, but instead realizes that there is no shir, that there is no amount of Torah learning that is kind of sufficient. And so they seek to inject as many moments of their day with a spirituality and with a devotion to God. And so practically speaking, because as much as a lot of what I've been saying has been in some ways abstract, I want to kind of leave everyone with three questions. That if you are looking for questions to kind of be a catalyst for the teshuva process over the next, you know, month and a bit, these are three questions. The first question, are you a valuable contributor to society? You know, do you treat this world like God has given it, you know, to you to take care of? Or do you kind of, you know, do you treat the world, do you treat everyone around you, every single other human being as merely the background actors in your life story? You know, like it's usually like a sitcom trope, but every sitcom has like that episode where there's a little joke about the main characters finally notice the recurring, you know, background actor. Do you live like that? Like, you know, are we trying to contribute to society? The second question, you may not, none of us keep all of the mitzvot, but do we at least acknowledge we are bound by them? Or do we pick and choose? And if we do pick and choose, how can we start, you know, building some momentum by perhaps eradicating some of those mitzvot that maybe we should start observing? And as a complete aside, but I'm happy to, one of the things I find with the pick and choosing, generally people are afraid that once they open the door to that mitzvah, they're going to learn there's a whole host of things they cannot do. And while that's undoubtedly true, the truth is, halacha is liberating. I've said this before. I love learning halacha in part because, and this comes, you know, I grew up in Manchester, which is a very, 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 you know, Haredi, a very stringent community. So a lot of the received wisdom, you know, you pick up in the town and then you kind of learn halacha and you realize you don't have to, you know, you don't have to be as worried about that as you were told you needed to be. But broadly speaking, anyone who wants to discuss with me privately, you know, specific halachot, I'm happy to, you know, help navigate that. Oh, I've always been afraid to learn about this mitzvah because I fear that if I learn about it, I'll never be able to, you know, live my life the way I want to. Again, if you're a professional thief, yes, learning about the prohibition of theft will present a problem to you. But most of the time, it's actually pretty easy to navigate. And the third question is, you know, do I devote my life to God? Is God at the center of my life, or is it me? And again, all of us have, you know, priorities. All of us have, you know, we're human beings, and let's be realistic. We do have to take care of ourselves. If we're blessed with families, we have to take care of them. We may have some responsibilities, again, to other people in our community, but at a certain place in that list, we do have to put God. And the question is, where is he on our list? How often do we think about him during the day? Like, that is something that is, I think, a very challenging, something to confront, and it can be challenging to confront, is how often in a given day do we kind of go through the motions? We might even be keeping the mitzvot, but we're not actually using them as a catalyst to think about God. We're not remaining on our God awareness. And again, this goes back to you wake up in the morning for Shacharit, and it kind of still forces God down your throats for at least that part of the day. Do we think about God enough throughout the day? Are we trying to design our lives to maximize our, you know, connection to him, our fulfillment of his will, our observance of his laws? Or do we treat him as an inconvenience? Or again, it goes back to what I spoke about last week. Do we pick and choose even when we have a relationship with him? Do we treat him like a spouse, as it were, who is always, you know, is a continual presence? Or do we treat him like a long lost aunt who, like, you have to call on birthdays, you know, turns up at family events, but other, you know, twice a year, oh, you have to say hi. But otherwise, like, you can basically coast the rest of your year without ever actually having a conversation with this person. Like, who is God in our lives and where does he fit? And so these three questions: do I contribute to society? Am I a good human being? Number two, do I recognize the mitzvot bind me? Am I a good Jew? And number three, Do I both use those mitzvot and also those other aspects of my life as ways of serving God more generally? Do I try and arrange as much of my life as possible in the service of God? And that is, you know, am I a from Jew? Am I a spiritually elite Jew? And I think these are three guiding questions to reflect about. You know, come Yom Kippur, as we're saying, Oshamnu, Bagadnu, yada, 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 as we're beating our chests and we are thinking about these specific failures of the past year, we can't lose sight of the general attitude that led to them. Because if we've not been the best human beings, if we've not been the best Jew, we've not even tried to aspire to be a spiritually elite Jew, then that is going to cause the sins. That is going to cause us to fail. But if perhaps we can shift our mentality, if we can change the way we think, the way we approach our lives and our relationships to God, that can hopefully result in just a general greater level of observance. And that will see us in a very good place after the Yamim Noraim.